Welcome to All In, the Sustainable Business Podcast. Three veterans of sustainability, David Grayson, Chris Coulter, and Mark Lee, take you behind the scenes of the most innovative and exciting aspects of business today.
Well, welcome to another edition of All In, the Sustainable Business Podcast. I am Chris Coulter, and I'm here with my colleague, David Grayson. Hi, David.
Hi, Chris.
And Mark Lee, again, is off on holiday this time. Just the life he leads, eh, David? But we are thrilled to have a very special guest today, Bart Houlihan, who is one of the co-founders of B-Lab. And that has led to this amazing movement of certified B corporations across the world. Hi, Bart.
Hey, Chris. Hey, David. Thanks for having me.
Oh, our delighted you can make it.
We're very excited about today. And as we were talking off camera before, we sort of wanted to get into your history a little bit. So this amazing idea of B-Lab takes place, I guess, in the mid-2000s, right? And how did you and your fellow co-founders come up with this idea? And I know it has a little to do with your own experience in business.
Yeah, it is directly related to my background, Chris. And so indeed, though I have spent the last 17 years co-leading a nonprofit, I am not somebody who has spent his life in the nonprofit space, believe it or not. I'm an entrepreneur by training. And prior to B-Lab, I actually ran an athletic footwear and apparel company with an amazing team, a company called And One Basketball. Chris, David, are you guys familiar with And One at all?
Great, not. I'm not a basketball fan, I'm afraid.
No, basically basketball, and I should know, but it just shows how uncool we are, Bart. That's all.
No, it probably means that we did our job well. So And One was a basketball, footwear, and apparel company. It grew to be the second largest basketball company on the planet. We were number two to Nike. And it was a brand built for ball players. And so we tried to identify specifically to the basketball culture and the basketball player. And we scaled it up to about, you know, call it around $300 million of global revenues. We were in 80 countries. And the reason for that background is there were some profound learnings for me at And One. We started this business when we were all in our late 20s, and we started with a blank sheet of paper. And therefore, we tried to build a company we would be proud of, one that took care of its employees, was engaged in its local community, was aware of its environmental footprint, and truly, really, you know, put purpose and values at the center of the business. And it turns out that's really easy to do when there's seven of you, and it gets a little more complicated as you grow. And so as we scaled, you know, we did a typical leverage recapitalization, bringing in a private equity player. We brought in incremental teammates. And with the scale, it became clearer and clearer that if you're trying to scale profits and purpose, there are both cultural expectations and legal impediments that get in the way. And we felt that firsthand at And One. And when it became most acute was when it was time to sell the company. You know, we had built this business. We brought in the outside investors. We probably had 150 investors in total. And it became time for this management team to move on. And what was revelatory for me was at the moment that your legacy is most on the line, the moment of sale or the moment of liquidity, you can't by law even talk about things like your employee group, your community, your environment, because you're legally required to maximize the return to shareholders. And so we had a great conversation at the board, but that conversation was focused on the highest cash value rather than, frankly, the values we had instilled in the company. Mm. And though I bear no ill will to the gentleman who bought the company, within, I don't know, 3 months, he had terminated all 300 of our employees. He had eliminated all of our charitable giving. He got rid of our ethical supply chains. He got rid of all of our environmental efforts, literally within 3 months.
Wow.
And though I bear, as I said, him no ill will, it didn't feel great coming out of that experience. And it led to the idea of a B Corporation. And ultimately, that began with a really narrow focus, building an alternative way for a company to have values at the center of the business and be able to preserve those values as you scale, raise capital, or have a liquidity event.
But before we get into exploring a little bit more detail, the concept of a B Corp and building up B Lab and so on, I just want to press a little bit further. Maybe this is the business school prof in me, but I just want to probe a little bit more about what it felt like when you saw all of the hard work that you had so painstakingly built up in the business being trashed by the person that you sold it to. You've been very polite and moved over it very quickly, but it must have been something quite visceral for you.
It was. Genuinely, it was. We had really invested ourselves in this business for 11 years. We were incredibly proud of the organization we had built. Things like an ethical supply chain and our own team, you know, our team of 300 across the globe, they both, to some degree, honestly, felt a bit like family. And to see at the back end of building this organization, all of that ripped out so rapidly and dramatically, didn't feel great, David. And importantly, like, we weren't ignorant. You know, I was an investment banker before and one. I knew what our fiduciary duty was. I knew what the possible outcomes of a sale were. That did not cushion the blow to lift your head several months after the sale and see all of those values eliminated from the business. And interestingly, the company collapsed. You know, it dropped over 3 years' time to $40 million in revenues. And so the combination was difficult. And I want to be also, you know, careful, because he paid fair price. You know, economically, we all did just fine.
Yeah.
This was about feeling like your legacy had been destroyed.
Mm. So if we could, thank you.
Sure.
Really appreciate it. So if we fast forward, you say, okay, so what would it need to be different in order for other owners like us in the future who want to run their business in a particular way, which is thinking about different stakeholders? Talk us through the process of setting up this thing called B Lab, because now so many of us in the field are so familiar with it, but you started again from scratch.
We did. But we started with an idea. And the idea, as I mentioned, David, was pretty focused. It was trying to solve the problem that we had experienced at And1. And for us, that problem was, we got to create a way that a company can scale, bring in an investor, and sell the company and hold on to its values. That was the original insight, at least for me, in co-founding B Lab. And what we learned, David, as, you know, hopefully most good entrepreneurs, we spent our first year just, you know, listening. We did a full kind of assessment of the market. And what was clear was we were wildly ignorant. There were hundreds of thousands of companies that were self-identifying as sustainable or triple bottom line or members of the corporate social responsibility movement that were local or charitable or environmentally focused. And it was in that first year that what began with this, let's create an alternative, broadened. Imagine like the aperture of the lens of our focus was really quite tight originally. And with the help of a year of conversations, the vision of the organization broadened. And what it became was essentially an economic systems change organization. We thought, goodness, there's real energy here. Perhaps our aspirations can be broader and larger. Perhaps instead of creating an alternative, we can move the entire economic system towards a more sustainable future. And so the focus of the organization grew and the strategy evolved to making sure we would build infrastructure that could catalyze a movement to create this amazing community of companies using business as a force for good. And so that was the first year, this wild realization that we were ignorant, that there was a lot of energy, and that perhaps instead of creating an alternative, we could instead influence the broader economic system.
Do you recall who the first certified B company was?
Yeah. And so, Chris, to that question, let me just spend a second on explaining what, because I'm sure many of your listeners don't know what a B Corp is. And so let me explain what a B Corp is and kind of what that strategy was, and then we'll kind of get back to the launch, because I think it'll provide a grounding for everybody. And so, you know, this is a corporate certification. And the easiest way to think about it is what fair trade is to coffee, certified B Corps is to a good business. And the evolution that we brought, there were really two evolutions that we brought to the world of certification. The first was that we were moving from a certification about a particular practice or a particular product to a certification for a whole business. There was beautiful work that existed before us, hundreds of certifications, but they were all stovepipe. They were about a product or a practice. They weren't about the whole company. We thought the evolution of the movement was moving towards people wanting to patronize not just a good product, but a good business. So that was one evolution, was like, let's talk about the whole. The second piece was that what we were seeing in the marketplace was that companies often started with all the right intentions and all these great values. And like And One, when an inevitable exit happened, those values didn't necessarily live on. And so critical to us was changing the legal requirement for these companies so that they had the permission and protection to consider their stakeholders post an exit. And so those were the two big differences about our certification. Number one, it was about the whole company. And number two, it included a legal piece. And we'll come back to the legal piece, but that legal piece was critical because it would allow a company, even after new investment, even after a sale, to hold on to its purpose long term and therefore solve the problem that we had at AM1. All right. So those were the two big changes on the certification. To be certified, you got to take and pass an impact assessment to demonstrate you have certain levels of social and environmental performance. It's really quite challenging. It's a very high bar. And the second is to do this legal change to make sure your corporate governing documents include a commitment to your stakeholders so that you can hold on to those values long term. You do those two things, you can certify as a B Corporation. And the reason why I wanted to back up to that, Chris, is that launch and everything that happened thereafter began with this belief that we needed a community of leaders. Mm. If we were going to build a movement, you had to begin with a set of leaders that could demonstrate, really materialize, make it, you know, tangible for people that indeed you can make money and make a difference at the same time, that these were thriving businesses. Mm. And we thought if we could create this community of leaders through a corporate certification, shine a light on them and tell their story, and then provide tools for others to follow to be more like a certified B Corporation, that would be the infrastructure to build the broader movement. Okay. And so the certification was about leadership. It's always been a leadership play. It is a means to an end. At the end of the day, if all we do is create a cute certification, I'll be disappointed. It's a means to an end. The end is economic systems change. And it begins with a set of just badass leaders who are demonstrating across a wild set of industries of various sizes that you indeed can do both, right? You can build a viable, thriving, economically profitable business that has values at its center. Okay. Now, coming back to your question, you are asking like
that. Where's number one? Yeah, let's.
I didn't forget. There was a question in there. And the question was, tell me about the founders. Yes, we began our first year of launching the certification with a belief that the founding class of certified B Corps would be catalytic. And therefore, we were very strategic who we were going to ask to come join us. Because ultimately, nobody knew what the hell a B Corp was, right? We're asking them to lend their brand equity to ours instead of the inverse. Yep. So at launch, we got to make sure we had a community that was different by size, by geography, and by industry, so that they indeed could be a leadership group. Otherwise, you know, we weren't going to get any traction on the certification. So we launched focused in the United States. We went public, I think, with 17, our first launch of the certification, is we had 17 companies on stage with us to launch the certification. By the end of the first year, we had 84 companies, and they were our founding class of certified B Corporations. And we could point to them as we continued to invite new companies in. But it was mapped out. It was like, what industries do we need? What leaders are iconic in the space? We got to make sure there's a variety of sizes. It can't just be, you know, 10 person or less companies. It's got to include some companies at scale. And we also want to hit different impact areas. If we do only environmental firms, people are going to think we're an environmental certification. And so there was this matrix we put together of attracting the community of certified B Corps and what's the founding group. And what's super cool is the founding class still call themselves founding certified B Corporations. We gave them a separate brand. We allowed them to identify themselves. And the pitch was easy, right? Listen, you guys have been leaders forever in this space. We think we have something here. If we're right, you're going to want to maintain that leadership position. If we're wrong, just drop the certification. No harm, no foul. And so it was an appeal to the fact that they had been leading this movement for, in some cases, decades. And we were asking them to continue to lead.
But it's, I know, an invidious question to ask you to cast your mind back 17 years or so now. But was there some internal ferocious debate about, oh, gosh, can we really set, even at the beginning, the bar quite that high in terms of the certification? I mean, I always say one of the things I think is fascinating about B Labs is the way that the bar has been progressively raised over time. When you started, unknown concept, you were trying to pitch it. Did you have some voices saying, oh, gosh, let's dilute that. Let's turn the dial down a bit.
So of course, David, and that risk led to some really important decisions at the onset of our work. The first was our decision to be a nonprofit. Truthfully, we walked in the door to our original community of potential founding B Corps, and they say, why aren't you a B Corp? Why are you not emulating what you're trying to build? And it came back to that question, David, the question of, we can never have somebody question whether we have reduced the standards to bring more companies into the community. One. Number two, if I'm also honest, three co-founders came out of the private sector. We had all had reasonably successful private sector careers. And it was interesting in our original conversations, people were asking, well, what's in it for you? Their assumption was this was going to be another equity play, you know, for us as individuals. And so taking that risk of people being concerned that we were dropping the standard to allow companies to join. And secondly, individual investment motive for the founders, we had to take both those off the table. So indeed, we founded the company as a nonprofit. Then with regard to the standards, David, you know, again, to be totally transparent, we didn't begin this work thinking we were going to have to create standards. We were like, surely there's somebody who has done, you know, a standard that would look at the impact a company has holistically, not in any one area, but at everything a company does, you know, consumers, community, environment, employees, and governance. And it did not exist. There was no comprehensive assessment of a company's social and environmental performance. And so we built it. And we built it on an Excel spreadsheet over a weekend. And then we tested it, David. We tested it for about 6 months, putting different companies through to try to find the threshold that was going to be identifying leaders. And coming back to that, you know, that original strategy, right? We got to make sure the standards identify leaders and are lifting up this leadership set, else it wasn't going to inspire others to follow. And so we set the bar quite high. But as you know, David, the assessment itself, it has 200 points. To be certified, you need an 80. You need an 80.
And I've always wanted to ask, why 80 out of 200 rather than 40% or more?
So this is true. At our first, we've built a standards advisory. The second element of your question about, you know, people being worried about dropping the standard, the other critical element is you got to build a governance structure that protects the standards. And so at the onset, we created something called our Standards Advisory Council that Chris has been a member of now for years. That Standards Advisory Council manages the actual standards and the requirements for certification. Okay. And so we set up a group of experts to set the standard and set the threshold. In this case, it turned out to be an 80. And David, in our second Standards Advisory Council meeting ever, I said, we have found the right threshold. It's a 40. And one of our Standards Advisory Council members said, nobody wants to pass at a 40%. It'll end up having an impact on how people evaluate the quality of your standard. If you tell people you need at least an 80, they're not going to care that it's 80 or 200. And he was exactly right. And so the 8, it began as a 100-point system. Before it ever launched, it turned to a 200-point system. You needed to get an 80 to pass. And the reason why that's so important is that, you know, we now have had hundreds of thousands of companies use the assessment, literally. The average score is about a 50, okay? To pass and be certified, you got to get above an 80. And the average for the community of these leaders, these exceptional companies, is about a 95. And so the takeaway from that is, number one, the bar is quite hard and quite high. Number two, the assessment is aspirational. It's intended to create a roadmap for companies not just to get above the 80, but to continue to continuously improve their social and environmental performance. And then last piece, the standard evolves. Every 3 years, we put out a new version. And you had mentioned this before, David, and that meant when you come back to recertify, the certification lasts 3 years, you certify in the new version of the assessment, and the bar has been raised. And so the threshold we set, David, way back when, was intended to identify leaders. But there were some important philosophical decisions we made, one of which was, we have no prohibitives. Here's what I mean by that. We wanted to say to any company in the world, you are capable of becoming a certified B Corporation. It's just going to take work. And instead of identifying all the things that we were against, our assessment was unique in that it only allowed you to accrue positive points. And so you had to accrue up to the 80 to certify as a B Corp. And you never lost points. It was only positive indications of impact that you're creating across all the stakeholders. And the philosophy there was, number one, we're never going to build a movement by standing for what we're not. Like, people don't carry a flag to say, guess what? I'm not big tobacco. I'm not pornography. That is not a rallying cry. And so instead, we wanted to demonstrate what we stood for. These are the values we stand for. And then secondly, we did create a way to evaluate what we call, through our disclosure questionnaire, whether there were negative impacts in a company, but they would be evaluated separately, David, and those negative impacts could mean, hey, listen, before you certify, you're going to have to remedy that particular issue, or frankly, the negative impact that you're creating through that one element of your business is so profound that it is outweighing anything of the positive impact. But it was a philosophy behind it. Number one, we'll take you from any industry. And number two, we're going to give you values you can stand for that you can be proud of.
And going through the GlobeScan, going through the process a couple of times now, Bart, what I think we really appreciate is just this continuous improvement approach and the advisory feedback. I mean, the B-Lab team is fantastic in saying, here's some areas where you could improve, and it gives you a focus in the company to prioritize some of the changes we want to do. And I think the 80 out of 200 is also interesting, because, like, when I first heard our score was, I don't know, it was high 80s or something like that. At first, like, oh, geez, all right, that's we're pretty damn good, until I realized it was at a 200 instead of 100.
Yeah, exactly.
but then this is the nice reality check, right? Because, like, we've got a lot of collective progress to make. No one is perfect. We're well early into this whole process, and we've got a huge amount of improvement to still do.
That's exactly the intention. Yeah. Go ahead, David.
So, Bart, you said very consciously you started in the US to have some kind of sense of being able to have it manageable to start this new concept with. What did it feel like when you started to have the B Labs in other parts of the world? And with that, inevitably, other people are becoming the champions of B Lab UK or System of be in Brazil or whatever, was there a little bit of, oh my goodness, are they going to be, can we trust our brainchild with these new folk?
Great question. And I'll start with the simple answer and then I'll work backwards. The simple answer is not at all. Like ultimately, David, you know, that when the vision broadened to say we're an economic systems change organization, we always had global aspirations. We recognize we have a global economic system. The idea of trying to create economic systems change in the United States without addressing what's happening globally is a farce, right? And ultimately, you have to focus on the global economy. And so we always knew we would be expanding globally. And the question was how. And we began in Latin America. They were our first test market to expand outside of US and Canada. And so we began North America, needed proof of concept to demonstrate there was demand for this certification and it was influencing a broader marketplace. With that proof point, we found, actually, they found us, four exceptional entrepreneurs who represented Argentina, Chile, Colombia, and Brazil. And they came to us and said, we'd like to bring this idea to Latin America and begin in those four markets with the aspiration of expanding it beyond those four markets to all of Latin America. And we'd like to be your partners in Latin America. And a few things became clear to us. Number one, it would be the height of hubris for three white Americans sitting in on the East Coast to think we know what would be necessary to build a movement of people using business as a force for good in Latin America, that indeed we were going to need local representation as we built the movement globally, that the local realities would drive the appropriate strategies to build the broader movement. And so the first test was in Latin America, and the anchor, David, the anchor was going to be the certification. The certification would be at the center of the movement because we viewed that as our enabling strategy, that if we were really going to build a broader movement, it always needed to begin with this community of leaders that demonstrated there was a better way to do business, right? And with that, you could build your ecosystem around those leaders, but the ecosystem would be predicated on the local market. And what it needed to be in Latin America was going to be quite different than Europe, than Asia, than Africa, that each context was going to require a different strategic approach, but at the center was going to be a global certification that maintained the same credibility, the same integrity, and would serve as a leadership community in each of the markets. So we began in Latin America, and they were Sistema Bay, holy cow. They are an amazing set of entrepreneurs that built an amazing movement in Latin America that created the momentum for us to then open B-Lab UK, B-Lab Europe, B-Lab Australia. We then went to B-Lab Africa, B-Lab Asia. It has been catalyzed by the unbelievable leadership and skill of those entrepreneurs who launched in Latin America. And interestingly, as I mentioned, you know, Latin America needed more of an ecosystem built for it to catalyze this movement of people using business as a force for good. Whereas in Europe, quite honestly, there already was quite a foothold for the sustainability movement. And therefore, what needed was more of a focus on the community of certified B corporations and potential legislative changes in the EU. And so each potential marketplace ended up with a different. Imagine, you know, pulling the levers on a music board, depending.
Great systems thinking in action, right? You're looking at it. And so let's bring up to today then, Bart. So you said the first year, there's 84 companies that were certified. Yeah. So what, 17 years later, you know, we're approaching the 20th anniversary. Where are we now? What are the numbers?
Yeah, there's about 8,000 certified B corporations in 90 countries, 150 different industries. They range from multi-billion dollar companies down to sole proprietors and everything in between. And remembering them being a means to an end, what I'm super proud of is their leadership has inspired another, I think now 270,000 companies to use the B impact assessment, that tool that we originally built for certification. Well, it became an impact management tool. And companies use it to measure, manage, and improve their social and environmental performance. It's free. It's a public good. And embedded are best practice guidelines and videos. You can set targets, and it is entirely for free so that companies can actually change their behavior to be more like a certified B Corporation. That is one of the scaling tools we have. And the second scaling tool is around that legal requirement. Let's just spend a second on that. You remember I said part of the certification included a legal change. You had to rewrite your corporate governing documents to include the interests of stakeholders. Well, it turns out that in many markets across the globe, that is against current corporate law. You can't just rewrite your articles of incorporation. If you do, and you're challenged, you might actually lose in a court of law. And so we had to create a new legally recognized corporate form, something called the Benefit Corporation. And that legislation began in the United States. We've now passed it in 43 states here in the U.S. The catalytic moment for us here in the U.S. was Delaware. For those who follow corporate law, Delaware really is the home of American corporate law. And Pat, they were our 13th state and catalyzed the rest of the U.S. The U.S. success has allowed us to pass it, I think, now in another 11 countries. It's been recommended by the G7 and the G20. And we kind of anticipate that law to continue to be passed country by country. And why it's so important is it is the center of the economic systems change work. It upends the idea of something called shareholder primacy. It changes fiduciary duty so that a company is legally required, not just given permission, but required to consider the impact of their decisions and all their stakeholders and balance those stakeholders. To us, as everybody talks about the move to the new stakeholder economy, you ain't going to get there without stakeholder governance. And this is stakeholder governance. It's fundamentally changing the rules of the game so that companies have something beyond the requirement of maximizing shareholder value as their fiduciary duty. So those are the two elements. We now probably have 30,000 benefit corporations across the globe, and that legislation continues to pass country by country by country. So that's kind of the state of the movement, Chris, where we're at.
And Bart, if you look ahead, is the vision for the future that ultimately, in as many different jurisdictions as possible, the default form of a company would be the benefit corporation, and that if a group of people setting up a business wanted to run it for maximizing shareholder value purposes, they would be the ones who would have to take the initiative and say very explicitly, we want to be an old-fashioned Friedmanite maximizing shareholder value kind of business.
David, without question. I want to contextualize this. This is a generational play that ultimately that's not going to happen overnight. And this is step by step by step. The first step is to create an option where a company can opt in to being a benefit corp. I think a next step, David, could be incentives. And everybody immediately goes to tax incentives. It doesn't necessarily need to be tax. It could be procurement. It could be investment. There's lots of carrots that government uses to try to incentivize good behavior. And then ultimately, absolutely, you know, if we back all the way up, the idea that a company has an impact on all sorts of stakeholders, but is only legally obligated to consider one of them, you can ask almost any business leader. And that doesn't make a ton of sense. It just, you know, as a former CEO myself, like, of course you take care of your employees and you're in and of a local community and you want to be a good citizen to the environment. And so you need to consider all those things. And the fact that the only way you can take those into consideration in current corporate law is to demonstrate that it will result in some value to your shareholder long term is back ass words. It just doesn't make a ton of sense to me. And so ultimately, yes, David, I fully hope that the benefit corporation structure, renamed to whatever makes the most sense in the appropriate jurisdiction, becomes the law of the land. And to that end, there's some encouraging momentum that we might be headed that direction. There is in London, in the UK, there is a movement for something called the Better Business Act. And the Better Business Indeed. Act yep. is essentially changing the corporate code for all companies in the United Kingdom, where they would have to consider all stakeholders and balance those stakeholders. That is in front of Parliament. It has a fair amount of, frankly, support right now. I'm sure it's going to take some time to pass. But the idea that that is right now offered legislation in the United Kingdom is really encouraging. Similarly, I think you guys know about the EU directive and getting feedback in the EU. We have inserted, and it is stuck right now to be considered, that stakeholder governance would be part of the EU directive on corporate social responsibility. And so that also would mean that companies operating in the EU would have to consider all stakeholders. All of it's going to take time, but it is encouraging to me. And that is at least our long-term vision, that indeed a company must consider all stakeholders as they operate.
And that we know that, I guess, the work we've been doing together, Bart, too, is focusing on the bigger companies who have that additional, more complex legal structure, especially if they're a global company. And there's lots, if I recall, I don't remember the dates, but the excitement of Patagonia and Natura and Danone being part of the B Corp movement were a big deal and seemed like quite a legitimizer, too, of this being beyond the smaller company, but something that any big company could attain. So where are we on that progression, and what are your hopes and aspirations for the global companies in the world and connecting to B Lab?
Great question. And it's a question we get all the time because it is a point of tension, as it should be, you know, as people are trying to evaluate the integrity, the rigor of our certification and of our movement. There's understandable anxiety that as you move into larger companies, you might be losing some of that transparency and integrity. If I back up for a second and just talk again about, you know, objectives, our objective is to move the economic system. To do so, you have to demonstrate that this can work at scale. Full stop. All right. Otherwise, you will forever be viewed as a small and medium market player and not have an audience in government and other forums where you need to have a voice to move the economic system. And so if that really is our vision, our mission, a more equitable, inclusive, and regenerative economic system, we have to show this works at scale. We've known that for a while, Chris, and the way that we began our work with multinationals, larger companies, was first with subsidiaries. Mm-hmm. We decided early that we would certify subsidiaries. They had to be a separate entity so that they could actually do the legal framework. And we had incremental requirements, recognizing that the incremental legal changes only have so much teeth when they're a wholly owned sub. And so we require incremental transparency. But as a result, we started certifying subsidiaries that are part of major multinationals, whether it be Unilever or Danone or Coca-Cola or Procter & Gamble. They all have certified B corporations in their portfolio. And the reason why that matters is we started to see that those subsidiaries were acting as entrepreneurs, influencing the global organization. We were getting calls from other subs saying, hey, listen, why am I not a certified? I want to be part of that. Why am I not a certified B Corp? And the story of Danone is useful. Danone, originally we certified a small subsidiary called Happy Family that mm-hmm. made organic baby food. Fantastic entrepreneur there that was scaling within Danone. And we certified them independently. And that inspired other subsidiaries to show an interest. And eventually, Emmanuel Faubert, who's now the head of the ISSB, said, this is something that resonates with our entire organization, and declared, I'm going to certify the parent organization. He declared this in 2015. And to show how difficult this is for a company of that scale, they set a 10-year plan to certify the parent by 2025, which they are still on target towards. They have 140, I think, subsidiaries. They have certified over 70% of their global revenues by now. And we're seeing a similar pickup, Chris, by other multinationals. For a while, Unilever had a strategy of buying certified B corporations that they then folded into Unilever and maintained the certification. And so that was our initial foray into MNCs through subs. But as I said, to really make this resonate as an economic systems change player, our intention would be to certify full multinationals. Now, that doesn't mean we need 500 multinationals. Probably doesn't means we don't even need 50. Probably need 5, right, to be taken seriously as we talk about economic systems change. And those 5, we hope, will have the same catalyzing impact on other multinationals. And what I mean by that is, you know, I mentioned we have about 8,000 certified B corporations. They have inspired 270,000 companies to use the tool to be more like a B Corp. So that ratio, we track, we watch how many new B Corps join and how that impacts how many companies are using the assessment. We add about 50,000 companies a year right now to the assessment. And so those MNCs, we hope will have the same impact. It needs to be the right MNCs that need to meet the standards. And as evidenced by Danone, that's not an easy undertaking. 10 years to certify Danone is, I'm wildly impressed with the work they put in, and they're not there yet.
But we're almost out of time. But it's an invidious last question. I apologize in advance. But if you look at all of those different B Labs around the world, is there one particular innovation that one of them has done that you think, yes, gosh, that's really, really neat. I wish we'd thought about that, or gosh, I'm so excited about the potential of this or that.
It's a difficult question. And my honest answer, the most rewarding element of the last 17 years has been working with these entrepreneurs. You end up getting inspired every day, David, every day. And you know how I mentioned that we evolved the standards every 3 years? That wasn't just because we were trying to set the bar higher. It was because we were learning from the community of certified B corporations, these trailblazers, that we weren't capturing the astounding impact that they were creating in these beautifully innovative ways. And the standard needed to continue to evolve to keep up with the community of entrepreneurs, not vice versa. And so with 8,000 B corporations right now, it'd be impossible for me to lift up one above the other 8,000 and say their innovation is one that I hope catches on. The truth is, the right question, David, is how those 8,000 are different than the other 70 million companies on the planet.
That's right. At the tip of the iceberg.
Is what we want to be lifting up and looking at. That is the essence of our movement. They are our leaders, and we hope they'll continue to inspire others.
Well, Bart, you have launched 8,000 ships, which will lead to 80,000, which lead to 800,000, we're sure of. And I think the insight and that inspiration that you and the founders had 17 years ago to try and launch proper, effective system change is happening. So thank you for all that hard work you've done and all the inspiration you continue to do. And thanks for speaking with David and I today, too.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks so much, Bart. And to everyone listening to All In, please remember to share this with others. You heard the wonderful inspiration and wisdom from Bart, and we should share that with those across the world. So please share and like and give us a good rating if you can. Thanks, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the All In Podcast. If so, don't forget to subscribe so you won't miss any future episodes. And why not also give us a 5-star review on iTunes? It helps others to find us, which helps spread the message.